The Fan on Demand. Don't leave your radio until he's done speaking. It would be rude. Bob McCown in Primetime Sports is on the air on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So you're the kind of the king of the ratings, Shannon.
Who?
Well, you seem to know everything about the ratings.
Okay. What do you want to know?
You should get up at the crack of dawn and peruse through all the numbers.
I'm a sabermetrics guy, Bob. You know that.
So last night in Toronto, you could have watched.
Yep.
The Raptors. Mm-hmm. The Blue Jays.
Correct.
Or
Montreal.
Yeah. Was there another hockey game opposite Montreal?
Detroit, Boston.
Was on too?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And then, Rangers, Philadelphia.
So.
At about 8:05, you could have watched one of the big four sporting events.
What do you think, where did Torontonians turn last night?
My gut?
Oh, this is your gut.
I haven't seen the ratings yet today.
So oh, well, they're not out yet. Never mind then.
They'll be out soon.
I'm not interested in your opinion. I'm only interested in facts.
Okay. Pardon me?
All right, so give me your opinion.
Hold on. Something's changed, Bob?
In the absence of facts, might as well tell me what you think.
Torontonians would probably go... Torontonians would probably go basketball, baseball, hockey, hockey, hockey. And the country would go hockey, 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 baseball, basketball.
That seems reasonable. Yeah.
I do think that the Raptors have done a good job of in this market, but I don't think they're a national entity yet. And, you know, there's going to be people in Halifax saying, oh, that's not true. I love the Raptors. I know there are people across the country that love the Raptors, but I don't think that it's as national as an impact as the Blue Jays are, nor do I. And it shouldn't be based on, basically even the tenure of the team in the country. And I don't think it has the grasp nationally that hockey still does.
Well, the other factor there to consider is while the Toronto Maple Leafs like to think of themselves as having a national fan base, and I believe they do.
Yes, they do.
The Montreal Canadiens also have a national fan base.
A very strong one.
So,
I think if you
took the Montreal Canadiens out of the equation, mm-hmm. if it was three hockey games that didn't include any Canadian teams,
yeah.
I think you might have a different...
You might be right.
Different number.
I would also suggest the fact that that the Canadians being the only team based in this country in the playoffs tugs at a few heartstrings. So I think there's even that more impetus. I mean, I think Oilers.
I never felt that way, to tell you the truth. I know there's all that conversation about somehow,
Bob, I can
if I'm a fan of whatever team and my team goes out, I should immediately adopt another Canadian team like it's some kind of a national contest.
Bob, I can assure you that, after living it for a long time, that if you get the best U.S. matchup in hockey, I can put any Canadian team on against any U.S. team and get a better rating.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm not disputing that. I just never understood why people feel this national attachment to a city.
Mm-hmm.
That you wouldn't root for or don't care about any other time. It's like I have to adopt a team, and I believe that. I'm a subscriber to that. I have to adopt a team.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I have to adopt a Canadian team. I don't think if
you don't think the regular fan.
If I'm a Maple Leaf fan,
yeah.
And the Leafs are out,
yeah.
And the only team left is the Winnipeg Jets, and three American teams. I don't feel obligated to say, well, I got to root for the Jets now because they're Canadian.
Funny,
they're Canadian city.
Uh-huh.
They're not a Canadian team. We don't have Canadian teams anymore.
I would say that most Canadians feel that they do, except if it's the Vancouver Canucks.
Which is everybody hates Vancouver?
Yes.
That's a Vancouver guy just thinking the rest of the world hates you.
It's kind of like being in Toronto in the NBA.
And you hate everybody else.
We love everyone.
You do not.
We do.
Vancouver people love themselves.
That's true, too.
That's what they love.
Yes.
And the rest of Canada can go to hell.
Well, no, the rest of Canada wants to come to Vancouver.
We do not. If we wanted to, we'd be there. That's the misnomer. You just,
Bob, you don't want
everybody wants to go there.
You can't drive out of the 416.
What's your point?
Oh, Bob. Come on.
I like Vancouver.
You love Vancouver.
I like Vancouver well enough.
You were thinking of moving there and doing the show from there and being finished at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I remember. Hey, what if we did the show from here every day?
No.
This would be great.
I never said that. You're making crap up now.
Oh.
Now, when I was in Vegas, I said that, and I actually didn't make it happen.
And look how that worked out.
It was great for 5 years.
Why did it stop?
Marriage.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was trying to figure out a discreet diplomatic way to say that. But
you could have just said it's personal.
No, but that's not a fair answer.
Okay.
If you're going to go down that road, you got to divulge all.
Mm-hmm. Well.
One of the people in my marriage didn't want to be there all the time.
I see.
It was not me. But I'm not going to say who it was specifically. And by the way, I haven't forgiven her.
Well,
what?
You could go back.
I might.
I mean, the current Mrs. McCowan loves Vegas, doesn't she?
No, the current one is the one that...
Oh, is this the current one?
Yeah.
Oh.
The most recent?
Yes.
My future ex?
Well, as a friend of mine always introduces his only wife as, this is the current Mrs. McDonald.
Yes. The most recent. Why did the Habs sweep the Lightning?
Well, they were a better team, period. And they were, you know, it's funny. I do think that if...
Didn't anybody predict they would sweep the Lightning?
By the way, you know, it's funny you say that. On the National Hockey League website, NHL.com, they had this bracket thing you can fill out. They had more than 500,000 people fill out their brackets. Mm-hmm. 7,200 people picked the Canadiens to sweep. Now, I'm sure that they were all from Verdun and from Gatineau and from Chicoutimi, but they did fill it out, and 7,200 filled out, said the Canadiens would win in four. You know what? I think we had a lot of respect for what the Tampa Bay Lightning did. We loved their story. We loved how they adapted to Steven Stamkos' broken leg. We loved how they adapted to whiny Marty St. Louis wanting out of town. And this John Cooper is an erudite, young, progressive type coach that isn't aggressive, really has a nice demeanor about him in the dressing room and on the bench. And I think it was a love affair. It was a love affair for them. So that's why. And that's why I think we all gave Tampa a little too much respect. In the meantime, like we talk about in the basketball side, how playoffs ratchet things up. The Canadians ratcheted it up. They played playoff hockey, and Tampa never played playoff hockey. And I think John Cooper needed to adapt, and I think the players needed to adapt, and they didn't. How's that?
I'm sorry, you said you were...
Oh. Thank you, Bob.
That's a bunch of BS.
Why do you think they swept?
Blah, blah, blah.
Why do you think they swept?
Because they sucked. That's why.
I was trying to say it nicely, and you know, that's because that's my demeanor. I say things nicely.
Well, but you wasted a lot of time in saying...
I call that quality content time.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you like a second opinion? So you were watching the hockey game last night, so you probably saw none of the baseball game, none of the Raptor game.
Actually, no, I don't know if you've seen our viewing room, Bob, here at Sportsnet, the green room. We watch everything.
You can't watch multiple things.
We have people
you can flip back and forth.
No, we have eight televisions, Bob.
Basketball's not that kind
of
game.
Not only did we watch the NHL games, we watched two OHL games.
No, they might have been on, but you didn't watch them.
No, we had people spotting for us and saying, oh, something's happening here, and we watched everything.
Well, who was the basketball guy, and what was he saying? Oh, there's a basket, like, every 3 seconds.
No, we were kind of worried more about tendencies, you know, Bob. worried about tendencies. Who's, you know, who's on a roll? Who's, you know, 16 unanswered points and a, you know, 16-2, you know. Were the Raptors getting calls early like they didn't? Did they get any calls late? How was Paul Pierce? You know, that type of thing.
Well, you're asking questions?
I was all night long, yeah.
Why didn't you just watch the game? Then you wouldn't have had to ask questions.
Because I have to watch. I had to watch everything.
You didn't have to watch it.
I do, Bob.
No one would have asked you about basketball. You could have said I didn't watch it. Well, how would you like the baseball game? I didn't watch it. I was watching hockey. And then we would have said, here, oh, okay.
Well, in fact, we had a long talk about whether Dickie should have been taken out before.
So baseball distracted you from your appointed duty.
During commercials, we would look and have discussions about other things. You should come one night, but no. You'd enjoy it, Bob. You'd love it.
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
You'd love
Who's
it.
Who's there?
Eight screens. Well, last night, John Garrett was there.
No, I don't like him.
Jeff Merrick was there. Your pal Neil's there some nights.
Oh, that's what I need, another night with Neil Smith.
Was he at your house last night?
No, he was not.
Okay.
I guess he was here, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. He'll be here tonight, though. So, I mean, it's a fun place to watch. It's just it's like a potpourri of sports.
Now, this from a guy who tells me all the time, I like to watch games by myself.
No, I like to watch big events, single events, by myself because I watch the sporting event and I also watch the television show, the production, the nuances.
But you don't want anybody in the room.
None,
you watch the Super Bowl.
By myself.
By yourself.
By myself. The Grey Cup, same way. By myself.
But a Stanley Cup playoff night, a playoff night for the Toronto Raptors, and you're in there with a bunch of yahoos.
Yeah.
How is that fun?
Well, hey, you know what? We have good frivolity. We laugh about things. We analyze things. It's a great night. 8 TVs. Everything going on. Poof.
Do they bring in food for you?
We have to bring in our own food.
So do you send somebody out?
Do you have a runner?
We
do have runners, but I walked across. I need the exercise. I walked out before everything started.
And where'd you go? What'd you get?
I went to Taco Del Mar. Taco salad.
Where's the Taco Del Mar?
It's over on Bloor Street.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't go on Bloor Street.
What?
I don't go on Bloor Street.
No, you do.
Well, over on the other side.
Christina is over in...
No, I don't let her go there anymore.
Really?
That's a non-Christina zone.
Over there at on the west side of Bloor Street?
Oh, no. I have guys with guns looking for
her. Between Young and Bay?
She's not allowed over there.
That's pretty high-end stuff.
That's the danger zone.
It is. It is. There's a few places in Yorkville
used to go there a lot.
Yes?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we've put a stop to that.
Well, she had a choice between going there or having a bigger barbecue in the backyard.
No, she wouldn't say that.
Oh, who had the... Well, who's...
She would say that was my idea.
But was it really?
Yeah.
Well, really?
Because the barbecue is my domain.
So...
She wanted to redo the backyard, and I said, well, if we're going to do all this, then I'd like to have an outdoor kitchen.
Yeah.
Like a proper place to go barbecue. Because this is a woman who would I'd walk in the door at 7:30 at night, pitch black in the middle of winter, 20 below zero, snow coming down sideways, mm-hmm. and there'd be a plate of filet mignon.
I get that at home too, Bob.
Go barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a standard fare at our house too.
Snow is up to here. The wind is blowing sideways.
Well, they don't care.
Go barbecue.
Yeah.
What are you on, crack?
I get the same.
So, all efforts to bring that to an end failed. Therefore, I said, well, I'm going to have to barbecue all winter, so I might as well make myself comfortable.
So did you get the heater, too, in the roof?
Yeah.
I got to get one of those.
I got a heater in the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got lights everywhere, heater, mm-hmm. snap-in windows.
So it's not snap-in windows?
Yeah, man.
So it's not really outside.
Well, it is in the wintertime. In the wintertime, it's not outside either. No, not anymore.
It's not really outside.
In the summertime, it's outside.
I think we need a ruling on this. I don't think it counts as being outside.
In the summertime, it's outside.
Yeah, but not in the winter when it's...
In the wintertime. Well, I don't want to be outside. That's the whole idea, you dummy.
Well, then you can't say you're barbecuing outside.
Yeah, I can.
I don't know. We might need a ruling on that from the commissioner.
All right, I'm barbecuing inside. I don't care. It doesn't matter that much to me what we call it.
You have the proper ventilation?
You should see the ventilation.
I've never seen you this excited in the last 2 years.
So the big ass barbecue is 54 inches across.
Okay.
Do you know how big that is?
54 inches, yeah.
That's a big ass barbecue.
Sure.
That's 100,000.
4.5 feet.
100,000 BTUs. The vent above it, you've been to like Yamato.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah.
Japanese steakhouse. So they're cooking up the stuff at the cooking table for you, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look up, big ass stainless steel thing that sucks all the air up, right?
Yeah. You got one of those?
That's what I got. 60 inches across. The thing is, it's got to be at least 48 inches deep too. And when you fire this thing up, you can't even hear yourself think. Like,
you hold on to your hairpiece?
If Howard Cosell was under there, his hair would go right up into that.
I worked with a great gentleman named Ed Whalen for a long time in Calgary, play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames. And Ed was admitted that he had a hairpiece. And we'd get off airplanes and he'd say, John, it's chin strap weather. That's what I thought about your hairpiece, holding on and barbecuing with one hand.
Well, I don't have a hairpiece.
What?
Go ahead.
No, I'm not going to.
There's no hairpiece there. It's all au naturel. But maybe if you're a good boy, you'll come over one day and you'll see it. And then you'll want one.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. That's why I don't bring my wife to your house.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't bring my wife to your house.
Mickey's been to my place.
No, the other one. Hasn't been to this one.
Really?
Yeah. She won't.
Oh, okay. She was at the old house?
Yeah.
I haven't seen her since then.
No. And the reason is because she'll go and we'll leave and she'll be in a funk for 2 days because she'll say, why can't we have that?
Well, you can.
No, we can't, Bob.
Yes, you can.
No, we can't, Bob.
Have whatever you want.
No. No.
The bank catches up to you.
Exactly. Oh.
Are you calling Hoffman now? All right. George Hoffman's going to join us. Do you ever meet George?
Sure, but I was telling the boys, George was he was a staple for years, wasn't he?
On this show?
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah. In the 70s.
Yeah. Hello, Hoffman.
Yeah. In fact, George is there now? Well, we'll say hello to him. Probably the longest running guest we've had on this program. Dating back to Hoffman, when? 76, maybe?
79 is when I first joined you and was in a little studio. I forget where it was, off of Yonge Street. I forgot. Wow.
Yeah, on Grenville.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate you on your 25th anniversary. You are one of the most enduring characters I have ever known.
Oh, George, don't tell him this. Don't tell him.
Guy.
Oh, no, I've got to feed his ego. Somebody has to do that, right?
Nobody does around here.
George.
I'm all yours, pal.
We have to live it.
Hey, listen, I've been very lucky to be part of this guy. And, I was almost his co-host.
You were. We invited you, and you didn't want to leave Chicago, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. That was okay. We understood, but...
I just wanted to be a big
love, George.
So I could celebrate the 100th birthday party.
Yeah, I know. You made that decision in 1982, 30 years in advance.
Before the lights were there, George. Before the lights.
I was there for that light 888. I was here that night, too. And it was quite a dramatic experience, even though the game was rained out. So, I've been part of this ballpark my first game I watched as a kid was 50 years ago here. And I started covering them in 1978.
So there's much talk about renovations to Wrigley. Is there, and we probably should know this, but is there a movement to ensure that the essence, if it is renovated, that the essence of the ballpark remain?
Well, the first and foremost, and Buck Staley was just here a few minutes ago and threw his two cents in and said that the league will do everything it can legally to support the Ricketts family. Their issue is getting this renovation off the ground. And their problem is they've got the rooftop owners, who I believe they're very scared of. Otherwise, this thing would have gotten going last year. But you've got rooftop owners who signed a contract in 2004 when the Cubs tried to block their view and felt that they were stealing money. So they made a pact with them that they would pay them 17%. The only problem was that they signed a 20-year contract, and it doesn't expire for another 10 years. And they're sitting there going, we're not going to move. And so here you have... There's been no movement at all for the renovation of the park. Yes, what's preserving the park? They want to put in giant scoreboard in the left field. Certainly that'll change the park.
Yeah.
Probably put in new sky boxes, put another scoreboard on the right field side, but the one on the left field would be a real giant jumbotron. And then, you know, then you've got the concourse, and then they want to make this like Fenway Park, outdoors where they close the streets, and then, you know, they turn it into kind of a festival atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. The question is when they'll get it off the ground.
I know the story hasn't been in the papers here for quite a while, but do I recall like a $600 million price tag on this?
Well, I think that the Cubs said it was going to cost $300 to $500 million.
Okay.
That's a lot of money. And, you know, when you start thinking about it, remember, they're the ones who want to put up the money because they know the city and the state's not going to put up the money. Yeah, you know, and figuring that once they put up that money, the price tag of the ballpark is going to go up. I think Forbes recently said it's worth $1.25 billion. They bought it for $850 million. I don't think they're bleeding money here, but they're losing attendance every day because, you know, the product in the field stinks.
Yeah.
But when you start thinking of that kind of money, you start thinking of, why don't you just tear the darn thing down and build it from scratch?
Well, there is that. I mean, I haven't been to Wrigley an awful lot. Well, what do you think about that idea? Well, forget what I think. I mean, you've been going there all your life.
I would love for this ballpark to disappear and build a new park. They're not
really,
Oh, yeah, I've never been a great advocate of the park. I mean, people love the ballpark, and they want to preserve it. You know, I felt originally, and, you know, there were thoughts originally when the sale of the club was up back 5 years ago, that whoever might come in would gut the ballpark, keep the bleachers, gut the inside, and redo it again, you know, in this area and make it a little more modern the way it is. You know, I'm not sure you're not going to modernize the inside of the ballpark other than putting the Jumbotron, which they need. It's the only ballpark that doesn't have a Jumbotron that people can look at other than the giant scoreboard, which they won't get rid of, which, by the way, would be a great place to put the Jumbotron. You got to make progress. You got to move forward. But no, I've been one of those guys that have always said, see if you can move out of the park for a couple of years and redo it. They won't do that because that would wreck the neighborhood's economy. So this project, Bob, if they do, it's going to take 4 or 5 years. They're just going to do it in increments.
Yeah, if they renovate. Right?
Well, which is what they did in New York with Madison Square Garden over a period of time of 3 years when both the basketball team and the hockey team were down. It took a lot longer, but in the end, they didn't compromise any regular season games for either team.
Right, but, you know, when the Yankees did their renovation back in the early 70s, they moved to Shea Stadium.
They went to Shea.
Yeah.
You know, but they can't, I don't know if the White Sox would want them there, but, I mean, you're talking about where the White Sox don't have a neighborhood.
Right.
Here you have a neighborhood of businesses. You'd kill the businesses if you even attempted to do that. I mean, I'm looking out right now at the ballpark in the back and seeing all the businesses that have sprouted up in this neighborhood, you know, and they can't do it. But when they originally bought the club, they didn't use the leverage of leaving the ballpark to get the state or the city to put up money so that they could renovate the park they wanted to. And instead, Tom Ricketts said, you know, we're going to be nice about this and try to work things out with the rooftop owners. Well, nice got them nowhere. They're still stuck. They can't go anywhere. So they never really used the power that they should have to say, hey, if you guys don't want to do this, we're going to pack our bags and move to the suburbs. They just didn't do that. Now they're stuck.
And yet, I mean, look at what the Atlanta Braves did. They had a better building than the Cubs had, and they didn't even wait too long. And they're going to leave the Olympic Stadium site and move all, Turner Field and right. And all the way to the suburbs without even blinking an eye. I mean, and right. the north side of Chicago would be totally, totally different without Wrigley Field.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the gentrification of the neighborhood started in the mid-'80s or the late-'80s, because I used to come here, and it was no bargain back in the late-'70s to come in the neighborhood. Well, I mean, you've got rocketing, you know, prices that have gone up for real estate in this area. It's a booming, it's Wrigleyville. Mm-hmm. And yes, if you left here, if the Cubs decided, you know what, we're leaving Wrigley Field, that would have a devastating effect on the area. There's no question about it. But they're not going to leave. They're not going anywhere. And, you know, there's push is going to come to shove fairly soon. I just don't know what Major League Baseball could do even legally to help the Cubs if the rooftop owners say, guess what, we got a contract. If the Cubs thought they could beat that contract, they'd be in court tomorrow. Matter of fact, they'd be in court a year ago. They haven't done it yet.
So you think that they believe that they'd lose?
I have to believe that they think, even though Tom Ricketts told me it was a convoluted contract with the rooftop owners, if that was the case and they thought they could win, they'd be in court now. What they really should do and what Major League Baseball should do is pay them off. That's the only way around it. It's going to cost a pretty penny, but you got to pay off the rooftop owners in one, in some way, shape, or form so that you can rule them out of the picture and start doing what you wanted to do. That Jumbotron, by the way, was we expected to see it already.
Right.
Not here. Matter of fact, nothing has been done to the ballpark. Nothing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, George. The Cubs do get a percentage like 18 or 20% of rooftops, right?
17%.
Okay.
But the problem with that is that that contract, which was signed in 2004, runs another, there's a 20-year contract. It was at the time, it seemed like it was okay. You know, hindsight is 20/20. It turns out to be an albatross contract. It's costing them dearly.
And just so I'm clear, the issue is you can't put up a new scoreboard because it would block the rooftop guys.
Yes, that's part
and there,
of it.
And there's no other location, possible location for the scoreboard?
Well, no, that's where they want to put it because it's about advertising. You know, they want to, this is about pumping more revenue into the ballpark. And they're not going to put it in center field because they want to preserve the center field scoreboard. Certainly makes more sense to me that the center field scoreboard has no need anymore. It's a great thing. It's part of the lure of the ballpark. I think that's what they think is Wrigley Field. The scoreboard is as much about Wrigley Field as everything else. So no, they want to put it in left field. And that's where they're going to put it.
Actually, I would argue, George, maybe at times when you consider how the Cubs have played on the field, Wrigley Field might be more important. I mean, but when you think about what WGN has done with its national coverage, with what people do in the summertime, they go to Chicago, they have to go see the Cubs play because of the aura that has been built around this franchise in so many ways other than the fact that the Cubs play baseball.
Well, there's no doubt that they draw a lot of tourists, and they draw a lot of neighborhood people, and then they draw people who just want to go from the neighboring Midwest states because they want to see the ballpark. Yes, that's great. They're also losing a lot of attendance. I mean, their attendance is going to be down this year from, let's say, 4 years ago, about 700,000 to 800,000. That's a lot of cash. What they really have to do is put a club on the field.
Mm-hmm.
The correlation to that is that they're also tied up money-wise after the sale of the club. That there's a lot of debt that they have to pay off. That's one issue of not putting a lot of money into the club now. Then you've got the renovation issue, so the Ricketts family has that issue. And Wrigley Field is one thing. The ownership here has a lot of issues to get through. And on top of that, having Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer put a competitive team on the field, because right now it's bad.
So I was going to mention Theo Epstein, the boy wonder from Boston, came over to Chicago a few years ago and was viewed as the imminent savior of the franchise. Has the love affair worn off?
To an extent it has, because I think fans are really angry that this is a club that can lose 100 games again. They do have a very strong minor league system. We may see one or two of those players come sometime this season. Javier Baez is one, Chris Bryant may be another, but they're not going to spend a significant amount of money on the team until they see the fruits of some of their labor in getting some of these kids to get to the major leagues. It's a crapshoot, there's no question. I know when Theo came here, he thought it was a 3 to 5 year project, and then after a year he realized this is a 5 to 7 year project. This is not a gut rehab, it's a teardown. You know, they've got, right now what they have on the field is almost a minor league team, save for a couple of players. They're going to trade Jeff Samardzija, the starting pitcher, their best pitcher. They're going to trade him because they need value in return young pitching. The one thing the Cubs don't have is pitching. They got a lot of prospects coming up, and not very many of them are pitching. So to turn the corner a year might not be until 2016. And, you know, Epstein, that would be year 5 of Theo's reign.
Right.
That's a long way to go before you can redo the club, but that's just the way it is here. He has the right idea. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You had to refurbish this club on the field by getting younger and getting young talent, and we'll see some of that talent this year and next year. The question is, will it be good enough to revitalize the Cubs?
A final question, and I know it's been asked of you on numerous occasions, but on this 100th birthday of the of the grand old ballpark.
No, I'm not 100 years old.
No. If this team magically won, if Bartman hadn't happened, if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, how do you think things would be different for Cubs fans? Is there, I guess the question is the romance to a great extent about the chagrin of the knowledge that they haven't won and aren't about to win? Is that yes. part of the enjoyment?
I don't know if the word enjoyment would be there. Right? And, you know, it's part of perhaps the curse of the Cubs that they haven't won in over 100 years, and it's going to be several more years before they even can put a team on the field that looks like it could compete for a World Series. But, I mean, you know, that if the Cubs won, they'd own the town. I mean, they would own the town even more than the Blackhawks. And when the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 2010, their first one, they had over 1.5 million people downtown celebrating them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like the White Sox. It was wonderful when they won. But if this team won, oh my gosh, I don't know where I'd go to hide. I mean, it would be absolutely amazing. But, you know, it's so funny that you go through a lifetime, you know, where you think, okay, they're going to do it in the 80s, and they didn't do it then, and then they're five outs away in 2003, and I was here, and I can remember the whole sequence of events that took place, you know, and they lost, and that was it. And they had another couple of chances with teams in 2008 and 2009. They were very good and competitive, and after that it was downhill. So, I mean, if they won, it would be great. I think it would be great for baseball, but don't hold your breath.
Georgie, it's always great to hear your voice. You sound exactly the same as you did in 1979. We love you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, pal. George Hoffman.
You guys need a room?
Yeah, please.
Holy smokes.
From WBBM in Chicago.
It's a great place. And by the way, other than the lineups for the washrooms, I love going to Wrigley. It is still a fun place to go.
The first ever game, April 23rd, 1914.
Before the war.
Or during the war.
No, the war started in September 14, didn't it?
Did it?
No, I think so.
Okay, you may be right.
But anyway, that's cool.
Yeah.
What was the name of the stadium then?
That's a good question. I used to know the answer to this. Briggs was Detroit, right?
Yep. Wasn't Wrigley, we know that.
No. I'm blanking. We'll look it up.
Yeah.
Have you got it there? The original name? Wegman Park. And then, after Wegman Park, Cubs Park after that.
That's an inventive name.
Yeah, but I knew it wasn't Cubs Park at the beginning. But I don't remember Wegman. Honestly. I thought I should have known it, but I don't remember that one. We'll take the break. When we come back, Barry Melrose will join us from ESPN. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
When his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard, we go walking.
Heard this in a while, huh?
I know.
Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher.
Yeah. Dusty Springfield, that's for Joe in Midland.
Hey, by the way, Bob.
I'll request Wednesday, by the way.
Bob, I'm the son of a teacher man. And he would have a fit.
Not as good a song.
He would have a fit if I didn't know that the First World War didn't start on August the 5th of 1914. He would have a fit.
Well, you looked it up and you did your due diligence, and now you know.
And I got scolded on Twitter. And
oh, did you?
But he would.
Well, why would people scold you? It was like 40 years before you were born,
Bob.
Or you were scolded.
No.
Who scolded you?
Somebody on Twitter.
Oh, well, get off Twitter.
You can't, Bob. It's a pulse.
There's too many idiots on Twitter.
Are you on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
My point exactly. John Cooper will join us in a bit, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Matt Devlin, the play-by-play voice of the Toronto Raptors, who won last night. Jesse Katz of LA Magazine wrote a very interesting piece on Yasiel Puig. Have you seen this piece?
No, I haven't.
Well, you might want to tune in.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting.
He's a fascinating character.
The allegations of the story behind the story and who owns Mr. Puig.
Oh, you know what? I recall this story now. Yeah, it's scary.
And then Don Banks of Sports Illustrated will join us.
A little underworld.
Handsome
tendency.
Little show. Yeah. The coach, Butch Carter, will join me for the next couple of hours of the program. What do we got tonight? Blues and Blackhawks for sure.
Yes.
Is there anything else? What else? What else is playing tonight?
Well, we got Ducks and,
Ducks and,
Stars.
And Stars.
And we got one more, don't we? Yeah, there's three.
Who's the other one?
Who we Colorado, Minnesota. No, they're tomorrow night.
Penguins and...
Penguins, Columbus. How could I forget?
Penguins and Columbus.
I've been in consultation in Columbus.
From ESPN, here's our friend Barry Melrose. How you doing?
Great, guys. How are you?
We're good. Before we get to what's happening tonight, your just general thoughts on Tampa Bay and Montreal. I don't know how much you had a chance to watch that series. Surprising that the Canadians, I think, most people would be surprised. Anytime you win in four, it was a surprise. But was that table essentially set by the injury to Bishop?
Yeah, totally. I think that Ben Bishop's been their best player all year long. You know, even when Stamkos went out of the lineup, they were still a good team, and that's thanks mainly to Bishop's play. So to lose him and not have him play anything. And then Lindbeck was okay, but he was pulled in two games. And, you know, those goals weren't playoff-caliber goals. And actually, goaltending in the playoffs this year is down big time. But those slappers in the top of the circle, those have to be stopped. One in the 70s and 80s, they don't go in now. And, you know, Montreal scored a number of goals from the top of the circle. So those just can't go in close games. So if Bishop's in there, I'm not saying Tampa Bay wins, but I'm saying that we got a long series. You know, Tampa Bay put up a heck of a fight with average goaltending. So, you know, I think it would have been a different story if Bishop would have been in the lineup.
So let me pick on one little thing you said. Goaltending is down or off in these playoffs. Can you explain that? Yeah, historically, we all know that goaltending is supposed to rise when you get to this time of year. That's supposed to be the difference maker. Teams play more fundamentally sound, are more conscious of their defensive play. Scores tend to go down. And what we've seen is sort of the opposite for the most part. A lot of goals for a Stanley Cup playoff, and goaltending that at least in some cases has been suspect. Any idea why?
First off, there's been a lot of soft goals. Ryan Miller gives up soft the other night to Taze. Bobrovsky gave up a couple to Pittsburgh. And Marc-Andre Fleury reciprocated the next night, gave up a couple to Columbus. But I think the main thing is that the teams have all bought into this crashing. You know, the traffic in front of the net is just horrendous right now. You usually have two forwards from the opposing team and two defensemen. So, you know, if the defenseman can get the shot through from the point and not get a block for that guy coming out, it's just wreaking havoc in front of the net. And we're seeing the pucks go in off bodies. We're seeing it hit the defenseman going in. You know, the teams are re-bought in. And that's the evolution of our game.
Right.
The goaltending and defense have become so good that that's the only way you score now. The teams are bought into it. The big power forwards all attack the net really well right now. There's no flybys. Everybody stops in front. Scoring, seeing a lot of rebound goals, things like that. So I think it's just the evolution of our game that they've learned how to play against these great goaltenders that have evolved in the NHL.
Barry, as a guy who played the game and a guy who coached the game, can you explain what happens to a team's psyche when they lose confidence in their goaltender? Because one would suggest that that's what happened in Tampa and might have happened last night in Philadelphia a little bit.
You totally lose your aggressiveness. And when I played in Toronto, we didn't have great goaltending in Toronto. We didn't have a great team either. We didn't have great goaltending. And what happens is you expect every shot to go in. And thus, you're back in your end. You're making sure you don't pinch. You're making sure you don't join the rush in case there's a two-on-one back and you know it'll go into the net. So you really just turn into a defensive team. And you can't play like that. You just sit in your own end and you're tied up the neutral zone and you just try and make sure you don't get scored on. You can't play with that mindset. And that's what happens when your goaltender lets in some softies. You just, I got to stay back and help him. I can't let no second shots. I can't give up 2-on-1s or 3-on-2s because I know it'll go under our net. And when you're always on your heels in the NHL today, you're always losing in the NHL today. So, and it's vice versa. When the goalie's hot, you take chances because you know that guy will bail you out. You know, you'll jump into a rush when maybe it's 50-50 or 60-40. You'll pinch down because you know if it does get by you, the guy will bail you out and thus you become much more aggressive and a much better team.
You talked about Ryan Miller and that soft goal. Two of the three games he's actually given up those soft goals in the first period. The Blues won one, they lost the other. That series is one that really, I know that they had an empty goal, the Blackhawks did, but 3-1 goal games. And the Blackhawks could be up 3-0, or the Blues could be up 3-0 and for that matter. What is really the difference between those two teams?
Not much. I think it's two really competitive teams. They don't like each other. They play very hard. Obviously, the Hawks are a little bit more skilled, but the Blues are grittier, more physical. It's coming down to paying a price. A lucky break here or there, goaltending, special teams. But they're really evenly matched. I will not be surprised if the series goes 7 games and all of them are nail-biters right to the end. So that was a big win for Chicago. They did it without Seabrook. Obviously, the back injury is huge for St. Louis. But these two teams are so close together. They battle so hard. They respect each other, which means they hate each other. It's just, you know, I just love that series. There's been some good series so far in the NHL, but that one, to me, is heads above every other series in the NHL.
Teemu Selänne, a healthy scratch tonight, Barry. Now, I know he's sort of been relegated to fourth-line duty, hasn't had big minutes. I guess they haven't been thrilled with his performance as the farewell tour, I guess, is winding down. But are you surprised that they would go so far as to scratch him?
No. It's this time of year. You have no friends this time of year. You don't care. Hall of Famer. I know it sounds cruel and it sounds terrible, but I know Bruce Boudreau played with him. He actually played for me in the American League. And you can't worry about stuff like that. You got to look at the lineup and you got to say which 20 guys give me the best chance of winning the game. And if Timo's not in the top 20, he's got to be out. And that's the sad part about players that play a long time. Those days will come. And it's really tough. It's really tough on the player. It's really tough on Bruce. It's really tough on the fans who love Timo. But Bruce has to make the decision of how we're going to win. And if Timo's not in the top 20, Timo can't be in the lineup.
Well, as you said, it's pretty tough for a guy who's guaranteed to go to the Hall of Fame, but you got to win hockey games at this time of year.
When Bruce Boudreau gets fired, and he will, because everybody
does.
You want to get fired saying I did everything that I thought was right.
Yeah.
And that's what you. That's one solace you can take as a coach is I made every decision. Depending on what it was best for the team. So that's how coaches have to look at it. It's a lonely position. It's a tough position. And you got to make some really tough decisions some nights.
Barry, good of you to take time for us. We appreciate it. Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you again, I hope.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Barry Melrose of ESPN. Shani, you were going to ask a question?
Well, I was going to ask him about, it was going to be a non-playoff question. It was going to be, he coached Trevor Linden as a junior hockey player. And I wanted to know, and it wouldn't have been a short answer.
No.
I wanted to know what he thought of Trevor Linden now that he has this job. And as a 16-year-old, did Linden have the tendencies that you knew that he would be a leader that he was and has become for the Vancouver Canucks? And they were together in Medicine Hat, Alberta.
What do you think? Does he?
Trevor Linden? Mm. Oh, yeah. I think he's got it. The savvy, the personality. Heck. I think they'd want him as the mayor in Vancouver as well, and there was talk of that at one point. He is a Canuck, and he has a chance to be organized that way.
Thank you, Shani.
Always.
More to come. Primetime continues in a few minutes.